He's here, everybody. Take him in while he is. Mr. Tubbs. I have no idea how my wife cajoled him into it. I think she bribed him. And that was it. Hello, I'm Dennis Prager. This is the Fireside Chat. For much of my prior Bulldog's life, Otto, he did stay in, but when he was very young, I don't think he stayed in bed either. So there is hope. Hope is a very big deal in the human condition. So this is Fireside Chat number 319, a chance for me to talk to you about what is on my mind and to take your questions wherever you might be in this world. So, a very serious topic today that is on my mind, it's on a lot of people's minds, and that is the Middle East. Every generation, it seems, has a moral test. Whether they can fight for what's right, whether they can discern good and evil, and then combat evil. It is an amazing thing. I often think about God and how God must look upon the human race and think, oh my God, well, he doesn't say, oh my God, oh myself, I can't believe this, another generation repeating great evil. Don't they ever learn? There's a very famous, at least 2,000-year-old statement in the Jewish liturgy in Hebrew, and it goes in English, in every generation, somebody arises to exterminate us. And as I always point out, not to persecute us, not to even enslave us, but to exterminate us. That's the Hebrew. Literally, the Hebrew is to put an end to us. And sure enough, two generations ago, it was the Nazis. In this generation, it is Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, and the like. It is amazing, the repetition. You know, I want you to put this into perspective. There are 22 Arab states, from the Atlantic Ocean to the Indian Ocean. There are, I think, 51 Muslim countries in the world. And there seems to be no place on earth for a Jewish state the size of the American state of New Jersey, or the size of the Central American country, El Salvador. I mean, think about it. No room on the whole earth for the oldest ongoing nation. I guess maybe Indians and Chinese might be tied. I don't know. But one of the oldest ongoing peoples in the history of the world, the Jews. Hebrews, Israelites, whatever term you wish to use. There's no room for them. They were kicked out by the Babylonians in 586 BC. They were kicked out by the Romans in 70 AD or CE, whichever term you wish to use. And now there's no room for them. They have to be exterminated. And that is what the enemies of Israel want to do, is exterminate it. And the amazing thing is, to get back to my original point, people deny this, that that's the issue. Here, let me put it to you. If you have any conflict about who is right, let me give you a very simple question to pose to yourself and to anybody else. As I did, you can see it when I debated this issue at Oxford University, I posed this question. If Israel announced, we are no longer going to fight, we are disbanding our army, and we are getting rid of all of our weapons, what would happen? If the Palestinians said, Hezbollah, Hamas, and their Iranian sponsors, we are making peace, we are fighting no more, we are disbanding our armed forces, no more fighting, what would happen? Okay, so this, if you can't answer that question, it means that you're not honest with yourself. And again, what would happen if Israel disbanded its armed forces? What would happen if the anti-Israel forces disbanded? Well, we know what would happen. If Israel disbanded, there would be mass murder of the Jews of Israel. Mass murder, rape, and torture, and burning, and so on. We saw that on October 7th, 2023. On the other hand, if the Palestinians said that, no more fighting, they would have a Palestinian state within a few months. They would simply negotiate the exact borders of it. They were offered, after all, Palestinian states five times. See our PragerU video on that very subject given by David Brog. Why isn't that, as the lawyers say in court, dispositive? Why isn't that all you need to know? The people keeping this battle, this killing alive, are the Palestinians, not the Israelis. In the history of the modern world, where there existed free countries, there were no free countries prior to the modern world, otherwise it would be in the history of the world. In the history of the modern world, has there ever been a battle between a free state and a police state, and the free state was the bad one? This is the first time. This shows you how distorted the entire thing is, the entire anti-Israel position. Gee, the people who live in a free country, they're the ones who want war. And the people who are living in a police state, they're the ones who want peace. This has never happened in history. And almost every war is between a police state, either two police states or a police state and a free state. This is the litmus test. I feel bad when parents tell me that the kid went to college and became pro-Palestinian, anti-Israel. I feel terrible for these people. Your child has lost their conscience. Your child's conscience has been destroyed. If you can't tell the difference between good and evil in the Middle East, you might be a very sweet person otherwise. I don't deny that. But it means that your ability to ascertain evil and good has been destroyed. You should all read the Wall Street Journal columnist Peggy Noonan, her column on what was done to Israeli women on October 7th. I've been reading about atrocities all of my life, and it was very hard to read. I salute her and the Wall Street Journal for publishing specifics. There were women whose genitalia were so destroyed that they weren't even sure without testing whether it was a man or a woman's body that they had found. I think you're morally obligated to read the column. And she asks the question, why are the world feminist groups disinterested? Peggy Noonan asked the question, why aren't the feminists of the world exercised over this? This, folks, is not sexual harassment. This is not the patriarchy. This is mutilation, torture, and rape, and then murder. I'll tell you, I know the answer. The answer is because they're Israeli. They're Jewish, and it doesn't exercise the left because the Jews are not a victim group. Because the left has taught a whole generation of Americans and others not to judge good and evil, but to judge rich and poor, strong and weak, white and non-white. Those are the divisions. They're not moral divisions. I have lamented this all of my life. That is why I knew I was never a leftist, because I think in terms of good and evil, decent and indecent, as Viktor Frankl in Man's Search for Meaning writes. That's the only division that matters. Not white and not white, not rich and poor, not strong and weak, good and evil. New York Times has pictures regularly on the front page of Palestinian children who have been killed in Israeli bombings. Would they have had German children on the front page of the New York Times during World War II? Look at what American bombs and British bombs are doing to Germany. I'm curious. This is not a rhetorical question. I am curious. If the same mindset existed at the New York Times in 1943, would they have featured dead Germans on the front page of their paper? I think they would have thought at the time, the idea that there was some moral symmetry between dead Jews and dead Germans is or dead any victims of the Nazis and the Nazis or and the Germans would was bizarre. Every dead German was dead because of the Nazis and Hitler. Every dead Japanese was dead because of the emperor and the Supreme Fascist Council in Imperial Japan. They weren't dead because of Americans. Americans did the actual bomb dropping. But the only reason the bombs were dropped was because Japan started the war. And Japan treated other Asians very similarly to the way the Nazis treated their victims, like performing hideous medical experiments on live people without anesthesia, without anesthetics. The world is filled with evil. I've been consumed with this subject all of my life. I hate evil with every fiber in my body. When I discovered the line in the Bible, those of you who love God must hate evil. It's a command in the Bible, command. I realized, well, maybe I do love God because I really hate evil. Well, if you don't hate evil, you don't love God. And if you can't recognize evil, there's another Bible verse that applies to you. Woe unto those who call good evil and evil good. This is the state that we are in, this moral confusion caused by the left and by this vast influx of immigrants from the Middle East into the Western world, who, as I said at the time, will bring their Jew hatred with them. They don't bring many clothes. They don't bring much money. But they do bring their values. And one of the values of the Middle East is Jew hatred, a.k.a. anti-Semitism. So I hope that gives you some food for thought. But remember the question that I posed originally. If Israel disarmed, what would happen? If the Palestinians disarmed, what would happen? That should pretty much make the case about why there is war at all. All right, time for the video question. Take it away. I don't know her name. Take it away.
Hi, Mr. Frager. My name is Olivia Romano, and I just have a couple questions for you. Number one, do you celebrate Christmas? And also, what kind of activities do you and your family partake in during the holiday season? Thank you so much.
Thank you. Let's see if I can do this properly. Thank you, Olivia. So what was the first one? Let's see. Do I celebrate Christmas? So I'm a religious Jew. And obviously, Christmas is not my religious holiday. At this time of the year, it would be Hanukkah. However, there is a big however. There are a few howevers. You've asked me actually one of my favorite questions, because I've never told this. You will find this interesting. Ye, the owner of the famous arm. Megan of Megan's Arm fame. So I love Christmas in America. I love the Christmas season. It is actually my favorite season. What is it? Isn't that lyrics in one of the famous Christmas songs? The most wonderful season of all?
Wonderful time of the year.
Most wonderful time of the year, yeah. I do feel that, actually. I love it. And I didn't know it. I didn't know it growing up. I grew up in a sort of a religious Jewish cocoon in Brooklyn, New York. I went to a yeshiva till I was 19. A yeshiva's half the day religious subjects in Hebrew and half the day secular subjects in English. And I went to an Orthodox Jewish camp. And so I grew up in a sort of cocoon, religious cocoon. But I was very well aware of Christmas. You will find this of interest, all of you, including Olivia, that though my family was Orthodox, wearing even, in fact, a skull cap or yarmulke or kippah, whatever term you use, at home all the time. On Christmas Eve, my family watched the Mass from the Vatican. Like I'm telling you, it was a given. We are sitting down, and it was midnight. It wasn't broadcast early. It was broadcast at midnight. And there we are, my father in his yarmulke, my older brother wearing a yarmulke, my mother with us, me wearing a yarmulke, the you know, the Jewish skull cap, and watching the Christmas Mass, the Catholic Mass from the Vatican on TV. And I remember saying to my parents when I was a kid, look, he wears a yarmulke too, because the Pope wears a skull cap as well. And so do the, not the bishops, the cardinals who were there. And I loved it. I was just enthralled by it. I was always fascinated by Christmas, by Christians, by Christianity. But I didn't realize, I didn't put two and two together until I went to England in my third year of college. And during the Christmas break, I traveled by train down to Morocco. So I crossed the English Channel by boat, then train all the way down to the bottom of Spain, and then again by boat. This was the cheapest way to do it, and fascinating as well. By boat across the Strait of Gibraltar, the westernmost part of the Mediterranean Sea, over to Morocco and arrived by boat. I spent 2 weeks in Morocco alone. So this was also my first non-Western country, and certainly my first Muslim country. And it was a fascinating 2 weeks, to say the least. But something huge happened to me internally. Because I've always monitored myself. I sort of want to know me like I want to know others. And I realized, you know what? I'm missing something. And I didn't even know what it was. And then to my shock, this kid from this religious Jewish cocoon said, I miss Christmas. It was revelatory inside of my mind. It was revelatory. How much I missed it and how much I loved that season and its music and the decorations and the spirit of the society, much more tragically than today in America, I'm sorry to say. I mean, there were holes, my whole street that I grew up on, virtually every home had great lights outside. Some had a manger scene. It was really, I loved it. And especially, I will admit, the music saturating the society. And of course, Morocco being a Muslim society, it was basically no Christmas. It was another week of the year. And that awakened me to how much I loved it. I'll tell you another thing. My again, I know that I haven't mentioned this. So my stepson, one of my two stepsons, my wife's two sons is autistic. And he lives with us. He's nearly 40 years old, and he lives with us. He's, by the way, extremely easy to live with, but obviously he can't take care of himself. That's why he lives with us. And we have made sure that he, though he is now, has been living in a home almost 20 years, he has been living in a home of Jews. Nevertheless, it would be selfish of us to remove Christmas from his life. So we have Christmas for him, as it were. And that's important. It would make my religion mean, or my religiosity, not my religion, make my religiosity mean to deprive him of that, just because that is not my religious holiday. But I love it. I listen to the music. I make sure, I mean, if ever possible, I will go to hear Handel's Messiah. And so that, I hope, it might be the longest answer to the shortest question that I ever received at a fireside chat. Now, what was the other part of your question? Let's see. What activities do you and your family partake in during the holiday season? Well, obviously we light Hanukkah candles for the 8 days of Hanukkah, and that might attend a Hanukkah party that somebody might hold. But beyond what I described to you, there's not much that specifically is done, though we do have a special meal with my wife's family, who are Christian. She has great love of Christianity. She converted to Judaism, but her roots are beautiful Christian roots, and I honor them, and I honor her family. I do the opening blessing. I've got it down, I've got to say. So thank you. All right, next. Okay. Marty in San Francisco. Dennis, I listen to you every week. Good. Can you please explain the phenomenon of anti-Zionist Jews? There was a demonstration in Oakland yesterday, his yesterday, obviously, where hundreds of them were wearing Free Palestine t-shirts. I'm flabbergasted. Mr. Toffee sends his woofs to your Snoopy and Mr. Tubbs. That's sweet. His dog is Mr. Toffee. Okay, thank you. Okay, so I actually have thought about this all of my life. The anti-Israel Jews, they're obviously a minority, but they certainly exist. So the best way I can explain this, there are a number of explanations, but the best way is this. This is something non-Jews do not know, and they can't be expected to know. The effect of the Holocaust on the Jewish psyche. Even if the Jew lost no relatives in the Holocaust, it has had a deep effect on Jews' psyches, including Jews who don't practice Judaism or may not even identify as a Jew. What I call it is national PTSD. Jews have post-trauma. What is it? PTSD. Post-trauma. What is the rest of the SD? Post-trauma.
Post-traumatic
stress
disorder.
Stress disorder. So, and I mean that literally. I this is not meant as some hyperbolic line. When you grow up knowing that two out of every three Jews of Europe, 6 out of 9 million, were murdered in 3 to 4 years, including babies, grandparents, just like October 7th, in fact, in Israel. And the world did nothing. I mean, to be honest, the world did nothing. You're affected. And what some people who are persecuted do is have sort of a Stockholm syndrome. They identify with their persecutors for whatever psychological reason, plus an obvious reason that subconsciously they think, if we show those who hate the Jews that we're on their side, I'll be safe. That's not even necessarily conscious, but I'm telling you, as a Jew who's written a book on anti-Semitism and has been involved and immersed in this all of my life, that is a factor. Hey, I hate Israel too. I'm safe. And I think that is definitely a factor, because there's no other parallel when you think about it. I mean, were any blacks defenders of the of whites who enslaved them? it would be the equivalent. So that is part of the reason. The other is that a certain percentage of Jews are so far left that they have truly taken in all left-wing values, whether it's men menstruate or Israel is the villain. By the way, both of those are held by the same people almost always, and they are equally true. Israel is the villain and men menstruate are equally true. I'd like you to know, by the way, having told you about how wonderful our series of videos on the Middle East is and how that alone can help you understand what's going on. You know, everything we do is free. PragerU Kids, PragerU Videos, everything is free. It's free because we raise money, and we need to raise a lot of money because we need to publicize what we do. Otherwise, without that heroic effort at publicity, people won't know about it, and we change minds and we touch souls, which is why we're in business. So I want you to know that anything you give between now and Christmas will be tripled thanks to generous donors who want to encourage people to donate to PragerU. So the triple match is up at PragerU.com. Next, Rayland in Houston, Texas. Dennis, you have said that one of the greatest tragedies of the lockdowns was the fact that children were kept out of school. But you also acknowledge that public schools preach a far-left ideology, not just public, private too, and indoctrinate kids with an extremely woke agenda. Isn't that a contradiction? Yes, it is. But it's true. What can I tell you? It's like, I don't know, what can I think about two competing ideas that are true? It's a silly analogy, but I'll maybe this will work. So let's say somebody gets seasick when they go fishing, but they so love fishing that they're willing to live with the seasickness. So both are true. I get seasick and I love fishing. Okay? There's a lot of contradictory, if you will, facts that coexist with one another. Schools stink as a general rule. That is correct. And it was a tragedy for kids that they didn't have school. That is also correct. Because the alternative to crappy school was not good. It was indolence. It was TikTok. And God knows what else. And anything that is actually taught, like math, they weren't taught that. So I'm so angry over the shutting down of the schools. I have to contain myself. And I said so at the time. I said that the lockdowns were the greatest international mistake in history in April 2020. You can look it up. It's on the internet, both my tweet and my column. And I probably said it on this. I'm sure I did, because I talked about how awful the lockdowns were regularly. The fireside chats are worth watching from that period. If you want to know whom to trust, I'd be more than happy for you to watch me during that crisis. I said the opposite of what people were told by the mainstream media. I had an article about the lockdowns titled, because I write a column each week, and I got a column, what was it called? Let's see, Dress Rehearsal for a Police State. That's what we were undergoing, was a dress rehearsal for a police state with all the lockdowns. And by the way, just for the record, because they're trying to rewrite history already, the teachers' unions were adamant about shutting the schools. Teachers' unions have done more damage to children than any other institution in this society. I'm sorry. I wish it weren't true. And that is another example of it. And now they deny, we weren't for lockdown. Chicago Teachers Union, for example, threatened to go on strike if they opened the schools. And it was no better in New York or any of the major cities or where I live in Los Angeles. It's quite amazing to me. All you have to say to people who went to college is experts say, as I've said for years, for the secular college graduate, experts say is what thus saith the Lord has been to religious people for thousands of years. They have just exchanged authority from the Lord to the experts. And between the two, I'll take the Lord. You can take the experts. We'll see in the final analysis who has a better life. Okay, thanks for being with me. Dennis Prager, Fireside Chat, number 319. See you next week.
Thank you for watching this video. To keep PragerU videos free, please consider making a tax-deductible donation.